Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, where Bob and I were doing the Scat Man right before we got started. How you doing, Bob?
We used to use that on the radio whenever we screwed up. Someone would hit the cart and it would play Scatman.
Really?
Yeah, going back to when it was first released. So we haven't really done a pod in a while because you've been traveling. Before we get into the Raptors and the Sixers, you want to wrap up where you've been?
Yeah, I was in Florida for 2 weeks visiting family, both my girlfriend's family in Orlando, mine in Naples. First time I could visit them in Florida since before COVID. So I was there for 2 weeks, and then we were going to do the pod on Friday. And then, Bob, who's one of the greatest Canadian musical influences in your life?
Gord Downie.
Peterson. Yeah, so something like that.
You've clearly got something in mind. So what's my answer?
No. Those answers are good, and it's hard to do because it's music versus wine, and they're very different. But
oh, I see. So you're saying like who for me would be like if I could? It's like when I went to went to Kingston, Ontario, and hung out for the weekend with the Tragically Hip and shot a film with them.
I would say my version is a little bit less than that. It's not Gord Downie. My God, you know that is this Canadian icon. But on Friday, I was staying in Niagara for the week, visiting my dad and doing some other stuff. And I went to go visit this winery called Batchelder, and the winemaker was there. And I said to him, hey, I just need to be around for 20 minutes. Say hi, buy a bottle or two. He opened up 12 bottles of different wines to try. And beyond that, Bob, I was so intimidated. He wanted my notes for all of them. So instead of a 20-minute visit, it ended up being 3.5 hours, which totally canceled our Friday podcast.
Yeah, well, that's worth it, don't you think?
Oh, it was. Oh, no. It totally was. Like, Bob, he had to leave me for a little bit because he was doing a Zoom call within France doing a wine auction. And he just said, Matt, all the wines are open. Pour at your own pace and give me your notes. And I was excited, intimidated. And I mean, I spat throughout, but like, I got to tell you, I was intimidated doing that.
Were you minding your P's and Q's? Were you on point?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, 100%. Not only that, I had a giant jug of water that I was chugging. I had to go pee like 5 times because, oh, no, I was totally on my P's and Q's.
By the way, you know how I'm really condescending about what I think I know and what everyone else doesn't?
Yeah.
When I did hang out with Gord Downie, he was leading a meeting and then he used some word and he wasn't sure if he looked at it right. He used it right. So he just looked at me and I gave him a nod like, yeah, it's okay.
Oh, did you really?
I did. But he really did look at me like, is that right? And I'm like, uh-huh. But just with our eyes. Just with our eyes. And nods.
How good did you feel at that moment?
Pretty good. He told me this really great story. George and I had this big meeting the next day. And he pulled me aside and he said, Bob, you know, sometimes when I'm really nervous, I like to just stand there and breathe and really soak it in and just remind myself that I'm in the moment, you know, so I could just go out there and just be in the moment. And I looked at him and I said, Gord, I'm not sure what that has to do with anything.
Good for you.
He laughed. It was good. It was good. All right. So enough preamble. You're back. I'm happy you're back. What a way to greet you, Matt. So glad you're back for this. So 131-111, Sixers over the Raptors, game one loss on the road. Any thoughts, Matt? Well, probably lots, but where do you want to start?
Well, the main thought is, what's the health of Scotty Barnes?
Yeah, it's so bad. Hey, before I get into this, I want to call in Charlotte just to give my general impression of the last 2 hours. Hmm. Hey, Charlotte, come here for a second, okay, Annie? Charlotte, what do you think of the Philadelphia 76ers?
Oh my God, they killed the Raptors. You bastards.
That's it? Oh, wait, you bastards? That sounds a little South Park-y to me.
She just did you killed Kenny.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was for you, Matt.
Oh,
it was for you.
Great work, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, Charlotte, have you, yeah. Have you watched Critter Christmas yet?
It's on my watch list.
Get to Critter Christmas. It will change. You know what? No, just watch it at your own pace, but oh my Lord, you'll love it.
Okay, so we'll, bye, honey. I got to do the pod now. Okay. So we were in the car and we were given her, because bye, Mr. Big Bones. So we're in the car and we're like zinging each other. And, you know, and Sandra and I get into it. And I said, Charlotte, you're not really a Mackowitz until you've been ripped. And yeah. Without even hesitating, she goes, well, you're not ripped.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah. All right. So back to it. Scotty Barnes, I don't know. It's obviously different than the John Tavares thing last year, because Tavares, we were afraid that he might be permanently damaged.
Yeah.
But it did remind me a bit of the beginning of a series where a key player goes out and then you've got this gulf and you're like, oh, geez. Well, they've got other good guys, but what is this going to mean?
He was the best, like, Bob, he was so impressive. He didn't look scared. He didn't look out of the moment. He didn't look overwhelmed. You know, he finished the night. He took only six shots, but he had 16 points. He had 10 rebounds. He had eight assists. He led the team in rebounds, assists. He had some no look. Like, he looked so good out there. Honestly, Bob, like, you know, in The Simpsons, when the vegetarian episode of the pig, it's still good. It's still good. No, it's still good. It's still good. Even the Raptors losing, fine. They lose game one. But if they don't have Scotty Barnes, I now look at this series very differently.
Here's the number that really jumps out at me, Matt. Look, you're right. He was two assists off a triple-double, and that was just in 32 minutes. But he was 7 of 9 at the free throw line.
Yes.
The next closest person was Pascal at 5 for 5. But his 9 attempts almost doubled anybody else on the team. I don't want to say that the Raptors were soft out there, but they were certainly physically dominated by the Sixers, but Scotty wasn't. Scotty, you know, I mean, it's not his game to be physically punishing, but he didn't look physically intimidated by the other team. And the fact that he got to the line that much tells you he was taking it to the tin. Like, why is Pascal only shooting 5 free throws? He needed to be way closer to the basket. I think the whole Embiid thing got in his head. Scotty just didn't look scared and played like he wasn't scared.
Yeah. Scotty played like he'd already been in 50 playoff games.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, that was the first thing. But what this goes to is that, and this goes to sort of a point I wanted to talk to you about. I wonder, when a team is great at offensive rebounds, and the Raptors are like second or third in the league in offensive rebound percentage, whatever the stat was, I'm always nervous about that stat because that's a hustle stat. Mm-hmm. And it's great in the regular season when you're the hustle team. But in the playoffs, everyone's the hustle team and Philly has more talent. That was my concern.
It's a great point. And, you know, had we done the pod yesterday, had you not gotten sort of tied up in St. Catharines, I would have given you my prediction for the series. And I have what I think is going to happen and what I fear is going to happen. And in both cases, the Raptors lose.
Yeah.
I predicted that they would lose in 7. I think when they get back home, especially without Tybull in the lineup for the Sixers, you know, I don't think the Raptors are going to get blown out. They could, but I don't think they're going to. My scared thing, though, was that they're going to get blown out because the way the Sixers play just fits better for the playoffs. You know, you've got a huge guy down low. Both Embiid and Harden get to the line constantly, and the Raptors cause chaos. And it's just so much harder to cause chaos in the playoffs when everything's called differently and teams play differently. I mean, it's one thing to throw a lot of 6'8" defenders and gum up passing lanes and stuff in February, but when everybody's on point and making that extra pass just a little crisper, it's harder to get guys to make mistakes.
By the way, that last point there about guys make mistakes, Philly had 3 turnovers for the game, for the entire game. And that always the concern is the team that's great on offensive rebounds, and the Raptors aren't a big team. They're a scrappy, hardworking team. Scrappy, hardworking team in the regular season does not translate as much in the postseason. And this is total knee-jerk reaction. Everyone listening, this podcast is being recorded literally 80 seconds after the game ended. But that was my biggest concern. Like when I was doing my questions, I'm like, does it matter that the Raptors are a great offensive rebounding team in the regular season when in the postseason, here's going to come Joel Embiid and he's going to treat you like he's Godzilla destroying a village?
Well, and they called it, they let him be Godzilla.
And but that's kind of Embiid. You can, my God, by the way, the guy shot 5 of 15, but the crazy thing about Embiid, and we saw it over and over again, a Raptor would have the ball and they would start to go towards the basket and there would be Joel Embiid. And they're like, nah, I'm going to kick it out deep. Like just, he might not win Defensive Player of the Year, but I wish there was a stat for, I forced a guy to pass the ball to the 3-point line because they were too scared of me.
It's total SS's, total scared shitlesses.
Yes. Yes. There you go.
There was a couple things that killed us tonight, and I know we're going to bounce around a little bit because we're just kind of reacting. Well, let's stick with Embiid because he is the second or third best player in the league.
Correct.
And he played more games this year than any other season in his entire career. He's going in healthy. He's going in strong. You know, usually when we've gotten him, it's, you know, some lingering back thing, or there's always some panoply of issues, health issues around Embiid, but we haven't heard that this time. All we hear is that he's mad. It's like we got Godzilla mad. He's had the best year of his career. He's absolutely at his peak. And you're never going to have an answer for him. But what freaked me out was the Raptors were afraid to ask the question.
Yeah, you're right,
Bob. Not Scottie Barnes.
But everyone else. Everyone else. And it's funny, I'm watching the game with Amy, and at some point, she brought up some very important points. But I would rewind him, like, because Amy plays basketball, you know, on like a weekly basis. And, you know, she's played the game her entire life. I'm like, watch this player turn a corner on a screen, see there's Joel Embiid, and just pass the ball up. Like, it's incredible. And you're going to get no statistical credit for it. But I don't think any player creates more fear than Joel Embiid defensively.
Which was one of the things that was so great about Scottie early on. It was that without the ball, he was cutting to the basket.
Yes.
He was figuring out how to get the high percentage play. And everybody else was just like, I can't deal with this. I'm going to kick it back out to three. Let someone else deal with this mess.
Well, Bob, to that point, you mentioned it. He went to the free throw line 9 times in 32 minutes as a rookie. He was one of the guys that wasn't afraid to mix it up in that area against angry Godzilla.
Pascal Siakam didn't have a bad night.
Nope.
But he didn't have a particularly good night.
Correct.
I think in every area except for Scottie Barnes, the Philly equivalent outplayed the Toronto equivalent. The two superstars, your first team All-NBA player, Joel Embiid, way outplayed your borderline third team All-NBA player, Pascal Siakam. Just way outplayed him.
Yeah.
Pascal wasn't bad.
No.
He looked like a good player out there, but he's not just a good player. He has to be a dynamite player for the Raptors to win. James Harden way outplayed Fred VanVleet, whether that was the lingering injuries that we suspect he has, the foul trouble, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Like, the other thing I want to get to is Harden's 14 assists. But just right down the line, the OG had a good game. OG played did. Well.
Yeah.
But Tyrese Maxey was the Philly third option, and he freaking annihilated the team. So just right down the list, every matchup, I guess symbolic matchup, the Sixers just way dominated. But I really do think it started with Embiid because he didn't let Fred be good. He took their hearts.
Now, Bob, Embiid didn't let anyone be good, like beyond Scottie Barnes. Like, it was incredible. And Maxey finished with 38 points. Harden shot barely 30%, but he had 14 assists, he had 5 rebounds, he had 22 points. Like, what we saw tonight from Philly, that's the best case scenario of the 76ers. That team was so good.
That's the one that beats them in 5.
What's that?
That's the one that beats them in 5.
Yes. That's the one that beats them in 5, and people send angry, send snarky tweets about Ben Simmons. That's how good that game is.
My first thought I wanted to start with you was, I miss Ben Simmons.
I know.
Can they trade back for him?
My main thought, Bob, was I really hope that Joel Embiid has the same vaccine regimen as Matisse Thybulle.
Or at the very least, Paul George.
Just, yeah, exactly. Like I feel right now, listen, COVID, you've really shut down Toronto for a long time. You've destroyed restaurants. Help us out. Be a buddy there, COVID. And could you do something to Embiid for, say, games 2 through 6?
Yeah. Joel Embiid, you should definitely get James Harden, find Paul Pierce, and the three of you should go out.
Good. Oh, yes. Hey, Joel should go to Harden. Hey, James, remember when you were in Houston and you basically, you know, tanked your way out of the Rockets? Can we go on one of those club tours you did then? That'd be awesome.
They don't need a new game plan. What Nick Nurse should be doing is he should be standing outside the Philly locker room. You know how they do in Vegas with the handout cards for the strip clubs?
Yes,
I agree. It goes like this with it. He slaps it on his hand. You pay attention. They should just be handing out strip club flyers.
Bob, I love it. And it should be, if you have a giant beard or you're over 7 foot, every lap dance is $10. And by the way, the first song is by Meatloaf. So you're there.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, when I knew we were cooked, or I mean, there were various moments, but one of those moments where you go, it was not the Scottie Barnes injury, although that's not great, but it was a Scottie Barnes drive and Embiid just clubbed him in the face.
Yeah.
And I looked at that. It was a flagrant, and it was a flagrant, but I thought Embiid is just going to beat the shit out of him. He's a mountain and he's determined to really make this hurt.
Well, Embiid, you know, his elbow knocked out Ken Birch and then his foot knocked out Scottie Barnes. Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
It was like a tank in there tonight.
Oh, God. For me, the moment it was done, and I made sure to make a note of this for Monday's show, was the Raptors were down by 11. 5:30 left in the third. Harden took a very difficult three. And he was well guarded. He hit it. Soon after that, he got a layup. Soon after that, he assisted on the maxi, layup. And then you blinked, and what was an 81-70 game was an 88-70 game with, like, you know, and a minute had passed. And like, what the hell? And that for me was like, that's when I said, hey, Bob, when do you want to start the podcast?
Yeah, I did get the text saying, this game's over, let's just do it. And I said, there's a lot of bad blood out there. Could be a fight. Let's wait till it's done.
Yeah. And you're right.
We did the responsible thing.
Yeah.
We haven't even gotten to Tyrese Maxey yet, but that's a really good moment because Harden kind of orchestrated that and it was lightning fast. And basketball is just like that. You fight for 7, 8, 9 minutes to claw back into within striking range. And the other team with 3 or 4 possessions can totally knock you back out of it again.
Yeah.
I thought when they came out of halftime and they got it to 3 and Embiid was on the bench and then Philly just kind of rolled it back again with Embiid on the bench back up to a double digit lead. I thought, yeah, there's no way they're going to do this. There's no way.
It was a worst case scenario, but to me, everything comes down to what's the health of Barnes, because game 1 and game 2, there's only one day off. And then game 2 to game 3, only one day off. Because, you know, we make fun of the first round where there's like 5 days between games. Well, for the Raptors, it's like, you know, game 2 is on Monday. Game 3 is on Wednesday. And then there's like an extra day off. The Raptors don't have that time.
There's no way for us to know it. As you said, it's 9:14. We started this about 30 seconds after the game ended. But just based on how long he was down and how many guys it took to get him off the court,
that did not look like a
one game thing. Clint Capella went down the other night in the Hawks game, and I see that he's out for a week. Now, I'm not saying there's necessarily the same comparisons, but it doesn't take much to be out for a week. And to your point, that's 40% of the playoffs right there.
Yeah.
Even if he comes back quickly after, you know, 1 week, he's going to miss three games. It can be three zip at that point. And who comes back if he comes back? Like, ankle rolls are notoriously slow to heal. Mm-hmm. How much mobility for a guy who moves beautifully and covers a lot of ground defensively? I mean, how much of that guy actually is back in the lineup? Is he at 60%, 70%?
I know. And then bigger picture, every NBA player has said with their first playoff round, they realize, oh shit, everything is so much faster and quicker and more intense. You just think part of this is, no matter what happened with the Raptors in the first round, if they got beyond Philly, whatever, you just wanted, like, especially Barnes, just get as much playoff experience as you could get, because it would help to accelerate your growth as a player. Bigger picture, that's the other really just bummer about this.
Well, clearly this is the Scottie Barnes rookie campaign, but it's sort of, I would say it's rookie, but in a different way for two other key players. It's rookie for Pascal Siakam being the best player on the team.
Yeah.
It's rookie for Fred VanVleet replacing Kyle Lowry.
Like, yeah.
These guys have something to prove as well. And if they go out and shit the bed in five and they look overmatched, that's not going to leave. As great as the season was, and you know, I predicted, you know, they were going to win 35 games. Like, this to me is just like an incredible year. Everybody played amazing. But if they go out in five and get pounded, we're kind of going to reset the dial to pretty much where it started when this year started.
We're going to reset it a little bit. Like, and the Raptors ended up with 48 wins. And as I've patted myself on the back 1,000 times, because remember, remind everyone about your good things and subterfuge your mistakes. I said the Raptors over, there's two NBA bets that I nailed. The Raptors over 35 and a half wins. And at the beginning of the year, I said, take the Phoenix Suns to win the West. And I've been so right on both of those. I've been wrong on plenty of others. I just forget them. But yeah, like the Raptors out in five would certainly leave a bad taste in your mouth.
So clearly tonight, out-rebounded. Philly didn't make any mistakes. Toronto was unable to force them to make any mistakes. Philly hit their shots, but honestly, like, the Raptors scored 111 points. It's not like they went cold. If you look at their best players, you know,
yep.
Some of their role players were awful. Gary Trent Jr., terrible. Precious Achiuwa, please take more threes. I mean, Tyrese Maxey needs the extra reps. Give him some rebounds. You know, Chris Boucher, foul trouble. Ken Burge whacked in the face. Hard to ask him to do much against Joel Embiid. Like, the bench didn't show up, and Gary Trent Jr. was terrible. But honestly, like, the three other starters other than Scotty, they weren't bad. They just weren't good.
The problem, yeah, no, you're right. No one was bad, but just Philadelphia overwhelmed them. And it won't look like it in the box score, because Embiid went 5 of 15. And Embiid's had 15 rebounds in so many games. But Embiid, in those 37 minutes, controlled everything.
You know, let's talk box score, okay?
Yeah.
Pascal Siakam on the night, 24 points, 7 assists, 3 rebounds. Not a bad game, not a great game, but certainly not that bad. 9 for 18, efficient, yep. 1 for 2 from 3, perfect at the line. He played a pretty good game. OG had 20 points. I mean, geez, if you would have said OG's going to have 20 going into this game, you go, I really like our chances. Fred VanVleet had 18-6, not great, but not terrible. This is kind of what worries me, Matt, is yeah. They weren't shit tonight and they lost by 20.
Bob, great point. By the way, VanVleet, who's shot horribly since the All-Star game, he shot 7 of 12. So he shot over 50%. But didn't go to the free throw line, just like Ananobi didn't go to the free throw line. So those two guys had a combined 69 minutes. High five, 69. Which, of course, is when two consenting adults orally pleasure one another simultaneously.
That is,
I like to take the sexuality away from it by describing it like that.
Do it as Gary Bettman, it'll get worse.
And then there's two players. One is a small forward, nothing small about him, wink. And I'll stop now. That's horrible.
I don't know why I like it so much. Is it officially a fetish that I like it when you do that?
I used to do the Gary Bettman phone sex talk line on air.
Oh my God. It made me so happy.
I'm unbuttoning my shirt. It's a well-ironed Brooks Brother shirt. And the top two buttons, my nasal clearly seen. Yeah. Anyway. So.
When they made a deal with Brooklyn to get Harden, people were wondering, okay, like, how's this going to work out? They weren't doing great, but honestly, they were down one engine with Ben Simmons out of the lineup, and you were adding a Hall of Fame player into the roster who wasn't having his best year, but is still, you know, pretty damn good, and not having been the top guy, and maybe, I don't know. We just didn't know what to expect necessarily, and it wasn't great. But maybe they're finding their rhythm. You know, it was a mid-season trade. It could be possible that, you know, they're pros. They've been down this road before and they've kind of figured it out. And now they're ready with the playoffs starting to really turn it on. Like, the Philly that we assumed that the Raptors were going to crush wasn't exactly the best version of Philly. So who knows who they're facing now? I mean, God knows the team that we saw looked like the team we expected them to be.
There was more pressure on Philadelphia than any other franchise in the NBA for the playoffs. The number one player with the most pressure, James Harden. The number one coach, Doc Rivers. That man has been, he has coached a lot of teams that were up 3-1 in the playoffs and lost. And then the number one executive under the most pressure, Daryl Morey. No team, it's not even close, was on Philly. And they went out and took care of business by 20 in game one. This was, unfortunately, as a Raptor fan, this is exactly what they wanted to do, to at the very least take some of that pressure off of them. But no team, Bob, had more on them than this team.
And rather than wilt, it strengthened them. They clearly went in with a chip on their shoulder, and they clearly went in very focused. We've said it throughout this whole pod, but to come back to it again and again and again, the Raptors didn't play that bad. They just couldn't get Philly to play bad. And the Raptors need to make the other team play below their regular level. They can't match up talent versus talent. In a puncher's contest, a team like Philly has a bigger punch. They need to make them do dumb things, and they couldn't make them do dumb things.
Let's stay with that word dumb. I love it. The Philly had 3 turnovers. They need to have like 12 to 14 turnovers. Philly had... And the only reason is I have the box score in front of me. They had 10 offensive rebounds. The Raptors had 7. For the Raptors to win, they need to be plus 5 to 7 in the offensive rebounds, and they need to be plus similar to that in turnovers for them to win.
So the Raptors were set up in their defense. It was in the first quarter, and Harden is dribbling at the top of the circle. And I'm thinking, okay, he's going to do something stupid. This is great. But no, he kind of just lulled his defender with a little bit of space and then fired a rocket to the corner, corner 3 points. And I thought, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Because that was a really smart, savvy basketball play made by a guy who wasn't going to ruin this with his ego. And he had 14 assists. And honestly, the Raptors are 6'8", and they cause trouble. But as long as your arms are, you can't be faster than a ball when it's passed with accuracy. And their passing just carved the defense apart.
Now we move on. And for me, everything just comes down to Scottie Barnes. That's it. That's why I don't
know. All right. So let's do our two early predictions for the rest of the series.
All right. Like, if Scotty Barnes is healthy or not?
Yeah. You know, you take it in any direction you want. Let's say if he's healthy. Like, let's say he comes back, but he's coming back from an ankle injury. May need a game or two to get back up to speed.
Well, then I'm nervous about, like, I predicted the Raptors in 7. And I'm nervous, like I want to knee-jerk it and change it like in incredible fashion. Thibault played 19 minutes off the bench. Thibault, the guy we're happy that, oh, he's not going to be here because of COVID. He scored 3 points. They didn't need him. So I feel with seeing the facial reaction of Scotty Barnes, I got to change it to Philly in five.
Yeah, that was my worst case scenario number, and I'm inclined to go with Philly in five right now. Although, honestly, it's the playoffs. And think about it. The Raptors were down 2 games to Philadelphia in the conference final, and they wound up turning it around.
Milwaukee. They were down 2 games to Milwaukee.
Right. Did I say Milwaukee?
No, you said Philly.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, against Milwaukee. So the playoffs, anything can happen. However, Philly gave us no reason to believe they would be worse in game two. I mean, Tyrese Maxey's not going to score 40 points, but I could easily see Joel Embiid doing the exact same thing again. James Harden doing the exact same thing again. And kind of, I could see the Raptors doing the same thing again.
Well, Embiid took 15 shots. Maxey took 21. Harden took 17. Tobias Harris took 14. They didn't need Joel Embiid to be the guy. He was the fourth leading scorer, and they won by 20. It's one game, and we could record the next pod 3 days from now after the Raptors win, and we're going to be laughing at ourselves with the negativity. But I'm sorry. There's not much right now that's making me feel good.
Gary Trent Jr. could go and have a 28-point game.
100%. Yes, he could. Yep.
And that would totally open everything up. Other than that, I just think everybody's kind of doing what we expect them to do. I think Pascal's going to average in the mid-20s. I mean, really, this comes down to defense. They scored 111 points. The offense wasn't the issue here. On any given night in the NBA, 111 points gives you a pretty bloody good chance to win the game.
You're right.
But they gave up 131. And honestly, yeah. I think they could have gotten to 150 if the game would have been 5 minutes longer. They were just not stopping them.
Yep. Yeah.
So... that's the part is I was counting on Philly being stupid and they're not being stupid.
No. Yeah. Perfect way to put it. Perfect way.
We see this sometimes with playoff teams where there's a history of, you know, they're cursed or this, like, were you at all surprised when Paul George didn't play in that play-in game?
No, because it's the Clippers. Right, so
they're cursed.
Yeah. I expect it.
And just any number of teams, you go, when it comes right down to it, they are who they are. Doc Rivers is going to blow this, right? Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. He's still got a chance to do it.
Yeah.
But no, Philly looked great. Toronto looked terrible. And Toronto didn't look terrible in a way where it was like a brutal shooting night. You know, the averages will come back around. They shot perfectly fine and got annihilated. They'll probably lose this series. Yeah, unfortunately, though, you know, we got the Leafs who look just fantastic, although last time I checked against Ottawa tonight, they didn't look so fantastic.
It's 4-4. Bob, I'm keeping an eye on it. It's 4-4.
It was 3-1 when they started this pod. It was like the, oh, I was so upset. Like the Jays, they were down. I think it was 4-1, 5-1 when I left the house to run some errands. And then, you know, you go into a store and the game's on and you sneak a quick peek. And I'm like, it's 5-5 in the seventh. This is great. I love this team. And I get home. It's like they lost 7-5. That's not how this is supposed to go.
Yeah. Well, it's 4-4, but we'll get off sports for a moment.
Okay.
Amy is watching with no volume. She has on the TV right now, Walk the Line. And I remember when I saw that movie from, like, God, it's like 2005. Does it live that long? I remember
Walk the Line, the Joaquin Phoenix one, or, oh, no, Walk Hard.
Yes. No. Walk the Line, the Joaquin Phoenix one. Reese Witherspoon, she wins the Oscar playing June Carter. And I remember watching it going, oh, my God, Joaquin Phoenix is going to win this Oscar. He was so good. And then 4 days later, I saw Philip Seymour Hoffman and Capote. And I remember watching the movie going, I'm so sorry, Joaquin. You're not going to win.
Is Joaquin Phoenix a good actor?
Yeah, he is. Yes.
He is, right?
Yeah. No.
Is he, you know, we talked about Michael Keaton being the most underrated guy out there right now. Is it maybe Joaquin Phoenix? I guess it can't be because he won the Oscar, right?
He won the Oscar. No, but Bob, your initial wondering, is Joaquin Phoenix a good actor? I think you meant to go, is Jared Leto a good actor? And he won the Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club. But it seems like Jared Leto's the guy that we wonder, is he really a good actor? Is he sort of like this? What?
I'm pretty sure he's not. But I think he's very good at picking roles that good actors would pick.
Hey, wait, I got it. Bob, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is Jared Leto a more intense version of Cuba Gooding Jr.? Or a guy that we wonder if they're a good actor. Maybe they are, maybe they're not.
Yeah, I love that analogy. I don't know if you know Jared Leto's band, 30 Seconds to Mars.
I do not.
Okay. They're kind of really successful in the States, and they've had some really big songs. And my instinct is to say, I hate this shit. But then I listen to it, and I go, it's kind of catchy. You know, his voice isn't that bad. I mean, I hate it, but I'm not sure why. And then maybe that's the Jared Leto thing. I like it, but I don't know why.
If I can interrupt you for a half second, please. Amy, who's quietly sipping the rest of the Thomas Batchelder Chardonnay, is giving thumbs up. She's a big fan of Jared Leto's band. Hopefully she's not a fan of Jared Leto because I'm in trouble.
Why? He's a cocky guy under 5'7", and apparently she has a type.
She enjoyed that as much as I. You didn't hear it. Amy just did her Borat. She just went, high five.
Well, you're not, I'm not ripped. You're Jared Leto. I think you came out on the better end of things today.
Bob, I don't know if you know this about me. I usually come out on the better end of those things, whatever those things are.
We did 7 years of radio and we've probably done about 300 pods now. And anybody who's listened to this knows, of course I know that, Matt. Mm-hmm. It's the bane of my existence.
I know. I apologize. Hey.
No. Again, you don't mean it. Stop.
Hey, before we get to sports, we go back to sports. Okay. There's a lot of places we can go. It's been a couple of weeks now. And we were flicking around in the movie channels and we'd already seen King Richard. I hate what Will Smith did, but I kind of feel bad for him because it feels like everything about his obituary and bio is going to change from that slap at the Oscars, which he never should have done. But this is a guy who entertained us our entire lives. Like, I kind of feel bad that we are now going to view him so differently.
Now, this is timely. We get to some Will Smith talk on April the 11th 16th. Or whatever. 16th, there you go. I like Will Smith.
Yeah.
He's kind of like The Rock in the sense that when he's in a movie, even if it's not good, I find it watchable.
Yes.
Mostly because he's charismatic. And I don't know if he's like an excellent actor, but he's a fantastic star.
Yes.
Perfect. I think Tom Cruise is both. I'm pretty sure Will Smith's only a great star and a pretty good actor, but it doesn't matter because movies love stars. That said, you know, time will go by. A couple of years will go by and actually it's going to help him. Hollywood is filled with stories of people whose careers were over until, you know, what he really needed was a comeback. Like everybody just needs a comeback story.
Yeah.
He's probably prolonged his career in the sense that in 5 years, we're going to have the Smithnessence, or I've tried to make Renaissance out of Will Smith, but
you know what's needed?
What?
A Jeffrey Ross led comedy special roast with Will Smith is the guy getting roasted, hosted by
Chris Rock.
By Chris Rock.
Yeah, that's actually brilliant, but not yet though. Too soon.
Too soon. Give it a couple of years. Yeah.
But in 3 years, it'll be HBO's highest rated show ever.
Who wouldn't watch that?
Absolutely. I don't think Will Smith's going to be out of the public eye for long.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jesus, like Mel Gibson was in the audience.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not here to do the compare and contrast between that actor, that actress, that actor, that director, what they've done bad. Because remember, this is just about what happened during the time frame of the Oscars. We've never seen it. It's why there's going to be a different punishment on him than than whoever you don't like. But I do hope, I know it's a 10-year thing. I hope that gets shortened. And I hate the idea that like Netflix or whoever is going to pause doing a production with Will Smith. It's not a DUI. What he did was a stupid ass thing, but please, for the Christ, it should not stop his career.
Yeah, I don't think it will. You know, one thing that it really clarified for me, Matt, and you and I have been doing show business for a long time. I've been around show business since I was 8 years old. And
yep.
Here's what I've learned and seen. All of these people are awful. They're all awful. Not so much in Canada, because nobody in Canada can get big enough to justify being awful. But the power they wield in LA, like the whole system is just so top heavy. You have to go down there to really understand it. You know, like assistants get fired because somebody had to ask for a coffee. Not that they didn't get one. It got to the point where they had to ask. Shouldn't you have just put it in my hand? What do I pay you for? You know, like it is so awful and the entitlement is so pervasive that I think they're all mentally damaged in one way or another. Like they don't exist on what most of us would call the reality plane. So when they behave in a way that is totally unjustifiable, well, no kidding. Their entire lives are built around they can get away with anything.
As I always say, I never want to excuse behavior. I want to explain it. I do wonder if you were someone who spent the first 20 years going to auditions, which is a humiliating experience, then suddenly you become a star. And within 2 years, you're in three projects and you're getting $20 million. I understand how you become an asshole. I hate that you are one, but I understand how you suddenly become one.
You and I, when we used to work together, I would always say, okay, let's come up with plans on how our show can be the biggest and the best. And you would go along with it to be polite, but you didn't really care one way or the other. I think you liked a plan that was well executed, but it wasn't important to you whether or not our show was the biggest. I think you just wanted it to be fun for you to do. Fair to say?
Okay, if you really want to peek behind the corner, yes.
I was the driven one.
Yes.
And you were sort of always like, as long as the show is fun, enough people will like it that will have jobs.
Correct.
Right? I don't think you wanted bad ratings. I just don't think you needed to feel like you had the highest rated show in order to feel validated.
100%. I'm on, right? By the way, Bob, I feel like I'm on the psychiatrist couch right now, but you are 100% right.
No, it's actually more me. Because I hated the idea of anybody thinking anybody's show was better than ours. It used to drive me nuts that Tim and Sid got as much glory as they did when I thought we were better. And I'm not saying that those guys weren't good. And they actually did a lot of really smart things to build their audience.
Yeah.
But I used to listen to their show and I used to listen to our show. And I thought they're 30 seconds to Mars and we're Arcade Fire.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I could be totally wrong, and I accept that those things are subjective. And I suppose if you're in this business, you kind of got to believe in yourself. But even at this tiny level of AM radio in Toronto, like you can get pretty twisted up. Imagine what it must be like being a superstar in Hollywood.
Oh, my God. Bob, it's a perfect analogy. Yes, and everything you said is true. I was always there to whatever you wanted to do. But, yeah, I know you were always the more ambitious one. My ambition was always... I mean, we can get really deep with this if you want. But my ambition was to every day do a damn good job and be happy. You had that ambition, but your ambition was to then conquer the world. And I never had it at the same level that you did.
And this was even more visible when we were at Off the Record and I was younger and I was just fresh off the rock and roll tour, you know, touring lifestyle. And that idea of building something up from nothing. Like I used to think Off the Record should be like a gang. And it was us against everybody, including TSN.
Including TSN, yes. I won't say the names of the producers we went up against, but we did.
We sure did. Some of them became our friends later.
Yeah, they did.
You know, there was actually, I honestly think a lot of times they thought we were assholes. They were right.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I guess to your point about Will Smith is what I saw there was a guy who, it's like you poured water on the robot, it just went on the fritz. And the water in this case was he felt like he was getting disrespected on his night.
Yeah. But then he got a standing ovation after he slapped a guy.
Because Hollywood people are cowards.
I know.
They didn't know what to do, so they thought, you know, I better just go along with it.
You're
There's
right,
that great
Rob.
Line from Rick, that Ricky Gervais line once upon a time when he torched them at the Golden Globes, you know, you guys are all into causes, but if ISIS started a streamer, your agent would be on with them tomorrow.
Oh my God, you're right. It was such a perfect line. And the thing we need to remember in the end, and Bob, I don't know if all the listeners will recognize this. I know you will. There's no worse party than a cast party. As someone who's done a lot of theater in my background, I remember after the end of a play, the wrap up of a play, when there would be the cast party, I would always find the boyfriends and girlfriends of the actors. And I would pull them aside and like, listen, I'm so sorry. This night's going to be so unbearable for you. Let's all get drunk together, but soon I'll be unbearable for you as well. But let's just enjoy this moment.
Worst party I think I've ever been to, not in terms of like poor quality, but just for what you're talking about. Closing night of a Fringe theater production.
Oh no, gotta be horrible.
Oh man, I felt like, I looked around, I thought I'm standing in the middle of 75 monologues.
Oh, and it's so true. God, I like Bob, in the same party, I've been the everyman, let's just all have fun. And then 4 minutes later, I'm fucking quoting King Lear. You know, drunk on bad booze.
You mean quoting from the Scottish play?
Oh, the Scottish. By the way, Bob, that joke by you was so douchebag and no one's going to get it.
Well, I did get invited to the Fringe party.
You did. Should we go back to sports to try to cleanse ourselves?
Save us, Matt. So I was at the Jays game, the one where they were up 6-1 and then they lost 12-6. God, yeah. You know what? Like, they're so exciting. They almost saved the Dome in April, but Dome in April cannot survive a couple bad innings.
Hey,
can I
ask you a question?
Sure.
I remember watching, and again, I could be totally wrong here. I might be doing the Colin Cowherd thing where I'm taking a small thing and trying to make it this huge crusade. But game two, the second game of the season at home, Jordan Romano came out to the mound and it was like a music light show and it was crazy. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the crowd was going nuts. And I remember thinking to myself, what? Like that this is something different. It may be partially because of COVID where everyone just wants to go out and drink and party. But it really kind of feels like that home games for the Blue Jays this year is going to be unlike anything we've seen before.
I think so. There's a couple of reasons. One, the offense is incredible. Two, to your point, we haven't had a normal season in a long time. People are just like, this team has now caught up to the moment. They're the most exciting team in baseball. We've been starved for action. It's a perfect storm. And then the light show at the Dome is actually kind of not terrible. The new screen looks really good. And they've done some things where they've tried to sync up lights with music, and it just, the Jays home, you know, entertainment package used to be basically Ace and Diamond doing bad break dancing.
Oh my God. That's right? Horrible.
Right. And like you go to a Raptors game and honestly, it feels like you're at Cirque du Soleil, and you go to see the Jays game and it's like a grade eight, you know, variety night.
It feels like, well, my name is Matt, and I'm here to say I like to rap in a major way, in a major way.
That's exactly it. And the people swaying back and forth and clapping to Let's Play Ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, everybody, here's a bat. Yeah,
it's like Aquabics at the Senior Center.
Yes. That's exactly.
We're taking this thing down. Yeah.
My name is Matt, and I'm here to say I like to rap in a major way. My name is Matt. There's a bat. There's a pitcher. I'm going to attack.
Ooh, not bad. Did you freestyle that?
Bob, I spent 3 weeks writing that line to nail it to now.
Are you sad when you do the Masters now and that you can't do the gangster rap Masters recaps?
Man, do I miss that. Matt Kuchar. Now, yes.
We used to have the beat from Ain't Nothing But a G Thing looped underneath it, and we'd rap.
Bob, mm-hmm. I miss that so much. And by the way, just to go insular for 1 second for the listeners, every now and then the bosses will be like, man, why don't you bring back what they said, what they meant? And I always give the same answer. If Bob Mackiewicz isn't there, I can't do it, because the comedy isn't about one person. It's about two people. And if I don't have you there, it's not funny.
You know, Matt, I've always been grateful that you're a decent enough person to know. You're a decent enough person to give me credit. And then you're a smart enough comic to know that you can't do that unless you have a straight man to set you up.
Yep. Doesn't work.
You know, you can get away with it, but then it becomes like a 65% bit and not a 95% bit. There were days, though, when it was killing. Well, it was your star piece. Like, it was your showcase piece, but it was our bit.
Yeah.
Like, it really did require a team. It's amazing how quickly you could throw those things together, though. I was always very impressed. You would come in, you know, you and I would start our day usually around 7 a.m. for a 9 a.m. start. We'd usually have some kind of show meeting between 7:45 and 8, just so we could get on the same page. And you probably, like, how long would it take you to write those? Like, you would find the clips and write them in what, about 20 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
They were really smart and really good.
But here's, and I appreciate, part of it was, and this is the nature of sports, not as many athletes are boring, while coaches and general managers are liars. And it was a perfect environment. It was a perfect environment to make fun of.
It's a rich terrain for satire.
Exactly. It was a rich terrain for it. And then when in doubt, just say, what did Jerry Jones say? And then you were set.
I used to do a lot of bits, but they tended to be a little bit more abstract. You know, I always used to like to do things like create dating profiles for different teams and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
One of the best bits we did, though, was like the reading Brett Laurie's tweets, which is pretty low concept, but adding Skrillex to it made it amazing. And that was really, I always thought of all the bits, reading Brett Laurie's tweets was your signature piece. In the sense that you thought of it, you created it, like that was 100% you.
The program director for both TSN and News Talk 1010 now, Jeff McDonald, every now and then it goes, when are you bringing back the reading of Brett Laurie's tweets? And I mentioned to him, well, he did block me on Twitter, even though I never followed him.
Do you remember Jeff Blair blocked us?
He did. No, wait, no, no. Jeff Blair never blocked you. He blocked our show. He blocked me. Why would he block me? I'm friends with everyone at the other station.
Dan, I was antagonistic.
You were. I'm not. I'm the happy guy.
That must have driven you crazy.
Honestly, I'd like to say crazy wasn't. It was more confused. Like, why would you do that to me? Like, I get Jack Todd from the Montreal Gazette. That man's a maniac. But for Jeff Blair, I'm like, I've never followed him before. I don't understand why he blocked me. I'm watching the game with my girlfriend, and she asks, how many athletes are named Fred? I feel we need to give Fred VanVleet more credit. How many great athletes in any sport have the name Fred?
Well, I can think of a couple athletes that had it, but I don't know if they'd be great. Like, there was Fred Wandruck.
Head, not Hez. Like, there was Fred Jackson running back for the Bills.
Fred Wormstruck, Freddie Brathwaite. I'm just going to Google athletes named Fred.
Do it now. Like, I just want to say right now, congrats to my girlfriend, Amy, for bringing this up. Because I remember thinking about it. No one names anyone Fred anymore. And there's no great athletes with the name Fred. And then I'm thinking like Freddie Lynn or Fred.
Well, what about Fred, like Freddie Freeman?
That's it. That's the only one. But is it Fred or Freddie?
Yeah, Fred Lynn. Well, I think Freddie opens up the door a little bit. Okay, well, let me just go through a couple of Freds, right?
Yeah.
Famous Freds. Fred Rogers, of course.
Yeah.
Fred Astaire. Fred Armisen.
So funny.
Even funnier, Fred Willard.
By the way, that's on my list of guys when you forget for a moment they died. My God, between like Gilbert Godfrey and Norm MacDonald, just so many comedians.
Fred Williamson, actor, former professional American football defensive back.
Hell yeah. Great in...
Well, I think I got a winner, and how could you and I as Toronto Blue Jays fans not think of it?
Freddie McGriff. But Fred McGriff's retired.
Oh, it has to be current.
Well, just how many current Freds are out there in sports? It's Fred Van Fleet. That's it.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
Exactly.
No, you're on to something, Matt.
Before we end this, because we're building up a ton of steam as I'm pouring myself a Thomas Batchelder Gamay Noir, how is everything, how's everything with family and how's everything with school with CC? Because I know a lot of the people that listen, they got kids, their family. So I'm always curious about the perspective from your guy, from you guys.
Yeah, it's been, you know, pretty up and down. I think things are a little bit better than they were for sure. Although the recent spike in cases has made going to school a little bit weird because, you know, like there's just a lot of questions. And I think the information that we're getting, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of really good official information. And it feels like the official parties out there don't want to talk about it, or they have invested interest to make it sound bad. You feel a little bit on your own trying to figure out what the hell to do, because like the kids hate the masks and you really don't want to send them to school with masks if you don't have to. And I think, you know, we should really only do it if it's fairly extreme. However, yeah, we've also seen COVID be fairly extreme before. So trying to understand where are we relative to where we've been. I'm pretty pissed off at the government for pretty much saying, fuck it, let's just not talk about it. And as long as too many people don't die, we'll just pretend it didn't happen of this most recent wave. It's almost like you don't want to be forced to have to act and do something before the election that's going to piss off their base. The fact that like the chief doctor in Ontario was in the Caribbean at the exact same day when they asked Ford, you know, where is he? And he said, he's the hardest working guy out there. And he knows he's in the Caribbean. Kind of sums it all up. By the way, as we leave, because I know you got to go, you know what I did? This is smart. I switched up my Twitter accounts. I still have my old one of Parkdale Panther.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the ether, but I started a new account and haven't like told anybody what it is.
No.
So I get all my news, but I have absolutely zero desire to tweet because I have no followers. I have 180, I'm following 184 people, zero followers. I will never say what it is because honestly, this is my safe space.
Please send out a tweet on both ends. Oh, are you wearing a mask? Are you part of the sheeple? And then, you know, you're the one on the other side.
That's one of the more pleasant words we've come up with in the last 2 years. The sheeple.
The sheeple.
That's a good one.
Bad ska band, by the way.
Very, you know, it's nice. Amazing to me. That's funny. It's amazing to me how people can say, you got to read 1984 to understand what's going on. And they mean completely and exactly opposite things when they say it.
Oh my God, you're so right, Bob. Okay. Oh, something we could do. Top five people you'd want to bring back from the dead. And they'd be so confused. How confused would George Orwell be when like very extreme right and left and Christ, many in the middle. Everyone would say, bring that book and read it to justify our ends. How would George Orwell feel?
I feel like Jesus would be really comfortable and go, yeah, it's exactly what I predicted. Ah. George Orwell, I think, is amazing. I love that. Matt, this was wonderful. I think we should probably do like these post-game wrap-ups for the remainder of the series, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And especially because I'm still in a very good space now before I get really heavy into the Thomas Batchelder wine. So I'm in a perfect space for it.
All right. Well, till next time. It's funny. You sent me some tweet or some text the other day. I just sent back, are you drunk? And do you remember your response?
Liz, it's business drunk.
I laughed out loud in the middle of it.
Which is, for people who don't know, from 30 Rock, when Liz Lemon and Alec Baldwin's character, and they're drinking during the day, and she's like, oh my God, I'm feeling drunk. It's business drunk. You can't get pulled over for it, or whatever the line is by Alec Baldwin. It was brilliant.
You can't get in trouble for it. It's business drunk.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.